Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business, and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble, not even cooked food sometimes. Right, Dr. Jasek? How are you today?
That's right. Hey, I'm doing great. Ready to do some educating.
Oh, man. Well, let me tell you something. I got an amazing email this morning that I want to read you really quick, you know, because sometimes we think, are we being heard? Anybody out there? Hello.
Right. Are we just talking out into the ether? Is anybody really listening?
We're just talking to each other, right? We're just talking.
Right, exactly. But we have fun anyway. So,
right. So I got this email this morning, which was awesome. And it says, Dee Dee, I hope this message finds you well. I just wanted to send a quick note to share my gratitude to your company and all of your educational efforts. It quite literally may have saved my dog's life. She listens to the podcast. She said, my boyfriend and I have a one-year-old Dalmatian, Atlas. When he was around 8 months old, we started noticing terribly itching on her paws, which quickly became a yeast infection. On March 17th, after giving Atlas flea and tick medication, she went into a complete downward spiral. She vomited to the point of body trembling and shaking, where she called the emergency vet because she thought she was having a seizure. Immediately after receiving the medication, this happened. The next morning, she said she got up. She did not recognize the dog that she woke up to. Her dog, Atlas, was overcome with anxiety, fear, and the compulsion to itch and bite herself. Had become manic-like. She said, to the point that if I left her, even briefly, I would come back to blood and self-inflicted wounds on her paws. So She said, the frenzy began. She went to four different vets. They did test blood work. They had sleepless nights. More vets, no answers. Symptoms persisted. There was hardly any hair left on her paws. And they were told by their vet this, Dr. Jasek, wait until she's old enough for Apoquil, which the pet parent said, and I quote, hell no. And this is where she said, I'd been listening to the podcast and decided to switch from a gently home-cooked food to a completely raw. So we placed an order. We added the healthy gut. And they worked with a holistic vet out in their area. And they started to see amazing results. And so she sent me pictures and she said, this is just in 1 month. And she can't believe the turnaround her girl is experiencing. So she said, we're so thankful. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for what you guys do. I will continue to sing your praises and share your mission with as many as I can. So that's awesome. And she did send me pictures where the dog is healing. And we do see that sometimes you got to move over to a real raw so that they get all of the enzymes, because enzymes are present. They are not present in cooked food. And these enzymes are responsible for so many different things. But doesn't that make you feel great, Dr. Jasek?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it just shows you, you know, what's possible, you know, and you know, that doesn't always happen in every pet that is that dramatic, but it always improves their nutritional plane. And sometimes maybe we need to do a little more to help, you know, a particular pet out, but definitely getting that good nutrition in. And like you said, the unprocessed food and, you know, a well-balanced raw diet, you know, it's just going to give them the best chance nutritionally.
Well, what do you think? And we don't know what kind of flea and tick medication this was, but again, what is it in the flea and tick medication that would cause this pet to go into this terrible body trembling and shaking?
Yeah, that's what, well, you know, those flea and tick medications, they're all neurotoxins. That's how they kill the bugs, is they're all toxic to the nervous system. And, you know, pets are going to have different sensitivities. Obviously, not all pets react that dramatically, or they'd never be able to sell the stuff. But they're definitely toxic. I mean, these are highly toxic chemicals. And I mean, I'm really grateful, you know, we're in Colorado where we just don't have a big problem with the bugs. I know other parts of the country, it's tough, because if you have a lot of fleas, you have a lot of ticks, you know, you don't want your pets to get Lyme disease and or deal with the, you know, whole flea situation. But these are toxic drugs. And I really encourage people to avoid using them as much as possible. And this pet evidently was particularly sensitive to it, which we'll see. Just like with heartworm prevention, any of these medications, you'll see different sensitivities. Some pets, you won't notice anything. It doesn't mean that it's not adversely affecting their body. And, you know, you look at a case like this, and this pet reacted dramatically. What about all those pets that aren't showing the symptoms, but these drugs are still having, they're still having an adverse effect on the body? You're just not seeing the symptoms, or you don't see the symptoms until further on down the road where you have, you know, some more advanced disease. You end up with cancer or something like that.
Yeah. And can you believe that? So here's this dog who has these incredible tremors biting at her feet. And then they say, okay, well, let's wait until she gets a little older, and we're just going to put a little Apoquil in her. What?
God, at least they didn't start it then, you know?
Right?
That's amazing. Like, oh, let's just wait and then put her on another medication so she can become more toxic without even helping the issue at hand. You know, drugs like that are just symptomatic. So you're not even looking at, well, what's causing this and how can we help her body resolve this now? You know, it's like conventional medicine just doesn't look at that. Like, well, if we can make the symptoms go away, then we've done our job. And it's not even medicine. It certainly isn't healing. And I think it does pets a huge disservice.
Oh yeah. Yes, I think so. All right. So we have another issue out there. Two other issues I want to ask you about now. One is about a zinc deficiency. We do know that there are certain breeds, Malamutes, Huskies, that have, they've been written about, you know, zinc deficiencies in dogs. But if a dog has some issues where they are lethargic, they're not eating, they have runny eyes, okay? And the vet is trying to figure out what's going on. I suppose they did a test that said that this dog had a zinc deficiency. But I don't really know what would that symptom look like? What would it look like if a dog had a zinc deficiency? And the second part of that question is, you know, in the raw diet, there's so many places that zinc can be found. It's so many different of the proteins, certainly in fish, in eggs, and all types of things. I think my worry is when a pet parent gets a diagnosis like that and they go out and buy some sort of a supplementation for zinc, that tends to worry me a little bit too.
Well, it's not something that's routinely tested, like we talked about before the broadcast. It's an expensive test. But I certainly have seen people that, you know, their pet has symptoms, and then they look up, you know, what are the symptoms of zinc deficiency? Oh, well, my pet has some of those, so let's try it. And I think doing this sort of micromanaging of nutrients is not a good idea. Because I know in dogs, like, one thing can be skin issues, you know, crusty skin, flaky skin, itchy skin. You know, skin, the thing about skin stuff is there's hundreds of different reasons or combinations of reasons why dogs will itch and have skin issues, but they all look pretty much the same. You know, I mean, there's some individual variation, but you're going to see a lot of the same symptoms with many, many different causes. So I think you don't just want to jump on, oh, well, let me just try, you know, giving my dog some zinc and see if that helps. If the underlying issue is they're eating a kibble diet and they've been over vaccinated and they're on some of, you know, flea and tick or some of these other chemicals. I mean, that's the issue. We need to be really looking at what's going on, not just throwing a supplement at them. Because it's also something that is, I think, can present different ways in different individuals. So yeah, a dog maybe, you know, has runny eyes or something, and you could read, oh, that could be zinc deficiency. But is it? I mean, is there something else going on? Does the dog have dry eye? Or, you know, I think we really need to look at the cause. And I mean, that's the foundation of how I practice, is I look at, well, what's at the root of this? What are the underlying causes? And let's work on correcting those, not just trying to, you know, throw supplements at them, or, you know, like we were talking before, treat them symptomatically. And the other thing too is nutrients are meant to work together. And this is, you know, as we've talked about, this is why I'm a firm believer in whole food nutrition. We balance the diet by feeding whole foods, because nutrients work together. They're meant to work synergistically in the body. It's not just, you know, zinc's out there by itself doing its thing. It's working with all these other nutrients. And when you get it from a whole food source, it's automatically going to have all those nutrients that it needs to be the most effective in the body. And if anytime you give a synthetic nutrient, you have no idea what effect that's going to have on the body either. So it's really just sort of a crapshoot. I think you really need to get down to the root of what's going on with the pet and explore all possibilities before just singling in on one thing.
Yeah. Some of the protein sources that have zinc in it in the raw diet, you guys: rabbit, chicken, turkey, pork, lamb, goat, eggs, beef, salmon, sardines. That's a lot of different places that you can grab some zinc.
Right.
Okay.
You know, and I think another thing, you know, to think about nutritionally, you know, because, you know, people ask me, well, how do I know that this diet is balanced when it's rotating animal products? Well, if you think about it, when you think, okay, well, we need zinc and we need all these nutrients, those nutrients are inside all of the tissues in our body. Well, they're also inside all of the tissues of the, you know, cow or the chicken or the turkey or wherever this meat is sourced from. We have, you know, very similar nutrients that are necessary to support tissue health. So when you're feeding these whole food tissues, they're not processed, you're not destroying all those nutrients, you're naturally going to be getting your pet's going to naturally be getting the nutrients that they need, because those tissues just already contain them. You don't have to add in a bunch of synthetics or even a bunch of produce and vegetables to make it, you know, a complete diet. You just need the rotation, so you're getting the right variety, and then you're going to hit all these nutrients because they're there anyway.
Right. And so I think that's a lot of times where I lose some of my pet parents is in this rotation process. Because I think that when one food is working well for their dog, they hesitate to change. There's still a belief that if I change proteins, my dog's going to have digestive issues. And we really don't see that. Now, I'm going to say, if your dog eats the rabbit and it has fur in it, can they throw up? Yeah, sometimes it tickles them or does whatever it does, and they're, you know, that fur, you know, they're not used to hairballs like cats are. And it's not that much fur either, but for some reason, you know, we do have some dogs that will throw that up. Or if there's a little too much fat, you know, and they keep eating it for a long time, that's why I always say in the higher fat blends, let's make sure that we're rotating those conservatively into the diet. But by and large, Dr. Jasek, when the dog moves from a duck to a beef to a pork, they should not be any issues in the digestive tract.
No, there shouldn't be. Dogs are natural scavengers. You know, if a dog were out in the wild, what would they be doing? They'd be eating, you know, roadkill or getting into, you know, garbage cans. And not that that's a healthy diet, but dogs really are their system is designed to be a scavenger and to eat this variety. It's not, it, if you just feed the same thing over and over and over and over again, yeah, you're not going to get that complete nutrition. And there's just absolutely no reason, like you said, why you can't do the rotation. And I tell people, if you find that your pet just doesn't do well on a certain protein, it gets diarrhea when you feed pork, well, then don't feed that protein. If you notice that there's an issue, but that doesn't mean you give up on the whole rotation thing. You find the blends that works best. Pets react differently to different levels of fat, like you were saying. So some pets can be on high levels, high levels of fat, especially the real high energy dogs, very active dogs, have a hard time holding weight on them. Like getting them on a higher fat diet can, you know, provide a little extra calories and energy for them because they need it. And so they do better on it. You know, some pets don't digest the fat so well. So we adapt, but I think the thing is you need to jump in, do some things, and then look at your pet. This isn't a spreadsheet formula that's exactly right for every pet. You and that's what I think it's put out there by the commercial pet food industry. Like they want you to say, okay, you don't even have to think. Like it encourages people, don't use your brain cells, just buy our food. And that's all you need to do. Just dump it in your pet's bowl every day and your pet's going to be fine. And that's really the way they want people to think. But I believe that the way to keep your pet healthy is you introduce all these different foods. You're getting all this different nutrition. Then you watch your pet. There's something that doesn't seem to agree with your pet doesn't like it, then maybe that's not the best thing for your pet. But it doesn't mean that you give up on rotation. And like you said, just stick with one formula. You need to keep trying and keep introducing new things.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we really, you know, trying to encourage our pet parents to do. We have so many different products, right? We've got your 80-10-10, 10% bone, 10% organ. Some of that's with tripe. We've got your 70-15-15, 15% organ, higher level of bone. And you've also got your fruits and veggie mix. So there's something for every pet out there. I am telling you, we can figure it out between the three of us, me, you, and Neely.
That's right.
Ah, we can cure the world. People just listen to us.
That's right. I know. That's right. All we need is more people listening to our podcast and the world would be a better place.
Hello, your friends. All right. Okay, let's talk about copper for a second. Well, first of all, I want to go back to elevated liver enzymes because this one always comes up in the bulldog category, whether we're talking about Frenchies, whether we're talking about French bulldogs. I don't know what's going on. You've had great success with your Chinese herbs and working with some of our pet parents on that. I have a customer right now who is doing raw. This is typically the path, okay? They're on raw. They go in for a spay or neuter. The dog's pretty young. And you have to do a blood panel before that. And they have elevated liver enzymes. Okay, everybody starts freaking out, right? And what do? They immediately take the dog off raw. Say you with liver enzymes elevated, you need to be on Royal Canin. Okay. And this particular pet parent, they actually did a liver biopsy. And they came back and they said, because evidently there were some issues. Okay, so they stopped doing raw back in January, went on Royal Canin. The pet parent called me yesterday because this dog is not doing well on a Royal Canin. Shocker.
Yeah, go figure.
Shocker. But the question and the reason that I want him to come see you, Dr. Jasek, is because the vet is telling him that the dog is allergic to copper. Allergic to copper. Now, I've heard of copper poisoning where maybe a dog has been eating certain types of clover, maybe he swallowed a penny, but some of the copper salt that causes copper poisoning is copper salt is an ingredient in some dewormers. But to be allergic to copper, I just don't know anything about that. What say you on that?
Yeah. No, that kind of verbiage doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I've never heard of a copper allergy. Now, there is a copper storage disease where dogs don't eliminate it properly. And that's common in some breeds. Bedlington Terriers are one.
Dalmatians,
you know, where they might not be excreting it. And so they could become, you know, toxic because, you know, their body just isn't kicking it out. So I don't know, maybe that's what was going on. And I don't know if the veterinarian used the said allergy to just make it to simplify that, or you know, it was the way it was interpreted. That's kind of hard to say. But I suspect maybe it was more something like that. But, you know, nonetheless, even if that is the case, so then we might want to be, if that were the case, we'd be looking at, you know, maybe limiting, you know, copper in the diet. But you still want to support the pet nutritionally. So you can't, so you say, oh, well, it needs to go on this, you know, prescription diet that's void of nutrition. It's even more important in these pets that have the, you know, medical issues like this. You still need to be supporting the liver. And again, looking at what else is going on. What else is this pet getting? Was it just vaccinated? You know, is it on flea and tick and heartworm, you know, summertime? You know, a lot of pets are on these chemicals. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Sometimes I've come to believe these elevated liver enzymes are still, it's the liver doing its job. It's processing things. But we have to be supporting it nutritionally. If you pull out the nutrition, and especially if you have something like, say, there was this copper storage disorder in this particular pet, then you pull out the proper nutrition, you're harming the pet even more. And that's probably why you said it's not doing well on the prescription diet. Well, yeah, because it's not getting any nutritional support. We still need to support the liver. And then there's other things we can do with herbs and helping the liver, you know, detoxify with, you know, things like milk thistle and dandelion, these things that help support natural liver function. You can add those things in just to help the liver function better, but you don't want to pull out the nutrition. It goes back to the same whole thing that the raw gets blamed for everything. And there's no foundation for that whatsoever. They, you know, the vets that say that really have no idea what they're talking about. They're just unfamiliar. And it's just easier to sell the bag of prescription diet, take them off of the raw, and then they can, you know, say I'm done and move on to the next patient.
Well, and that's what I said to this pet parent. I said, well, first of all, if your pet has some sort of a health issue, the clue that your vet is not a nutritionist is that they said, go eat Royal Canin, have your dog eat Royal Canin. I mean, does that even make any sense? No, it doesn't make any sense. You know, so much information out there, Dr. Jasek, is convoluted. And this is the problem, where pet parents get really, really confused. And I was reminded of that this morning when I was looking at Dr. Ian Billinghurst. He has, you know, several books out. He was a big proponent and is a big proponent of the BARF diet. But even in his book, I was looking at this and I was thinking, some things just contradict each other. This is one, and this is why pet parents get confused. He's talking about natural digestive enzymes, right? Which we just talked about, that's why you love the raw diet, why we love the raw diet, because of the natural digestive enzymes in raw food. It's not in cooked food. It's not in HPP food. But I was reading on, and he was talking about probiotics. And he was saying, for dogs and cats, a natural source of probiotics is in the large bowel contents of prey animals. So like he was saying, the droppings of sheep, cattle, and horses have lots of probiotics in it. And he was saying, now I'm not suggesting that we deliberately feed cow poop and sheep poop to our dogs or cats. He said, but it's a great source of probiotics. But then later on in his book, he's talking about if a dog has diarrhea, if they have vomiting, if they have digestive issues, he's saying, smell the food that you're feeding them. And if it smells off, be very suspect. And I thought, well, wait a minute. You just said that we're going to feed cow poop and sheep poop to the dogs, and that's good for them. But if your food smells like it's off, then what?
So what does that sheep poop smell like? It doesn't smell so great. Yeah. So, right. So that smell, that's so subjective. I mean, you know, we have like, I tell people, you know, all the time when I'm talking to them about your blends, like if you get a blend with tripe in it, it's going to stink. So don't let that throw you off because it's going to smell. It's, you know, it's cow stomach and they do smell. But you know, yeah, smell is pretty subjective. So that is a bit contradictory.
What do you think that raw food smells like? If it has organs, bone, fur, eyeballs, meat, I mean, there's going to be a different scent to it. And it doesn't smell like kibble. I mean, it doesn't,
right?
You know, it doesn't smell like a steak. So I think that some people do get very confused. The other thing that really, really scares people to death is this thawing process, right? So the thawing process, because of the way the FDA makes you put the information out there, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, I left my roll out on the counter last night. Am I going to kill my dog? No. You're not going to kill your dog. Now, if you let, and I don't even think, Dr. Jason, if you left it in a hot car for 3 days, it'd kill your dog. But I'm not suggesting that, so people don't do it. But, you know, bacteria begins to grow at a certain warm temperature. But if your house is cool and it's just been sitting out on the counter, there's just not an issue. But people do really, really worry about this thawing process for the raw dog food. How do you thaw your food?
I thaw it ahead. I mean, I take it out and put it in the fridge. You know, I've got little dogs, so I actually will leave one of the chubs out on the counter just so the surface gets a little soft so I can get through it with a knife and cut it into pieces. And then I refreeze those. And then I just usually like taking out the next day's food, like a day ahead of time. Hopefully I remember to do that, but my dogs, like I can't thaw out a whole chub because they don't go through it that fast. It takes them 3 or 4 days, you know, a couple days to go through a full chub. So, but I agree. I think if you have a big dog and they're eating like a pound or 2 pounds a day and that chub sits out like overnight, there's nothing, I don't think anything's going to happen. And, you know, there's a big difference too. You know, there's this whole thing, bacteria is bad. There's way more good bacteria than bad bacteria. There's bacteria that can cause disease, yes. But there's also so many beneficial bacteria and non-pathogenic bacteria. So even if that food did start growing some more bacteria, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be bad. Like I said, you see animals, you know, like in the wild, if a pack of wolves or a mountain lion kills an elk or a deer, you know, there's animals munching on that carcass for days. It's sitting out there in the hot sun. They're not dropping dead from that. You know, it's so their systems, I think, are equipped to handle that bacteria. If they have a healthy stomach, this, you know, low pH, you know, the high acid content in the stomach, I think that can be really beneficial, and it's going to help with any potentially, you know, bad or pathogenic bacteria. But most bacteria are fine. I think most dogs, if they've got a healthy gut, they're going to be fine.
I think that people think somehow that our dogs over the years, and to some degree, I agree with them, have less of an iron stomach or an immune system. But that is not because they're not made to be able to take on bacteria. It is because of what we have been feeding them. It is because of flea and tick, heartworm, all of the different vaccinations, all of the different things that we've been pumping into their body. So it's not that they've been domesticated to the point that they can't handle bacteria. It's because of what we've done in that domestication process through the traditional healthcare regimen.
Yeah, oh, totally. I would agree. It's the stuff we're giving them that's disrupting their normal metabolism and disrupting normal gut health that is causing the problem. And that's why, you know, sometimes it's harder for some dogs to transition to raw. You know, if they've been eating kibble for a lot of years and the pH in the stomach is high, or they're on medications that reduce the acid content in the stomach, like the, you know, the acid reducers, the Pepcid, and those types of medications, they don't have normal digestion to begin with. And so we have to give the body some time to reestablish that normal digestive process sometimes before they will get full benefit from the raw food.
If you have a pet, which I saw a pet parent yesterday, and she was talking to me about her pets and they were having issues, you know, skin issues, digestive issues, these sort of things. And they're Germans. And she picked up a really small box of food, and I was like, and I didn't say anything, but she eventually in the conversation said, well, we're still doing half kibble and half raw. And I said, if you want to get on top of these issues, you're going to have to drop the kibble. And she said, well, it's a process with my husband. He doesn't understand why we need the raw food. And I said, well, it's sort of like this. If you continue to feed kibble and you continue to have these issues, your vet will put you on Apoquil, and then you will be in Dr. Jasek's office fighting a cancer diagnosis.
And the thing is, even a little bit of kibble is still going to perpetuate that inflammation. There's benefits. If you add some fresh food into the diet, are you going to improve your dog's nutrition? Sure, you are. But if we're battling inflammation, which is where all disease comes from, and these highly processed kibbles and these toxic ingredients perpetuate this inflammation in the body, even if you're feeding it a couple of spoonfuls a day, you can still be creating that inflammation in the body if the dog is sensitive to it. So even a little bit can still be perpetuating the disease. So I completely agree with what you just said. You have to come completely off of it. You know, at least do it for a month. You know, if you've got a different point of view, is your spouse or somebody else in your household, I'm going to understand that that's challenging, but a lot of times if people will see the results, they might be a little more convinced. And so try it for 30 days. Just say, look, can we just do this for 1 month? Let's just try this new diet for 1 month. You know, if it doesn't help, then we can, you know, go back or do something else, or, you know, but then if it helps and people in the household see the benefits, I think they might be a little bit more convinced that about how beneficial it is for the pets.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, we see it. We see it every single day. You see it every single day. You see pets that are in really, really, really bad shape. And the first step is to get that nutrition, you know, get good nutrition. And then you start, you know, using those Chinese herbs, using some different types of homeopathic medicines instead of pharmaceuticals. And certainly, the last thing that I just want to touch on really quick before we go is, if your pet is in a situation, Dr. Jasek, where they're lethargic, where they're not eating, where they're having some issues. Some pet parents believe that if you give a dog prednisone, that this will increase their appetite and that they will begin to heal. I don't think that would be my recommendation. Would it be yours?
No, not without knowing more about what's going on. I mean, it's true. you know, dogs eat more when they're on prednisone. You know, anybody that's had a pet on prednisone, it does increase the appetite. However, you want to know what's going on. And especially if a pet isn't eating, there's a reason for it. And we need to find that out, because prednisone can absolutely make some conditions worse. It suppresses the immune system. If you have any sort of infection, you're going to be suppressing the immune system and make the condition worse. So again, you want to find out, why is your pet not eating? You don't want to be just throwing prednisone at them as an appetite stimulant. I definitely would recommend against that. And it doesn't help healing. Prednisone suppresses symptoms. And sometimes in the short term, that's beneficial. It doesn't heal anything. It just controls symptoms. And sometimes it's appropriate to, you know, reduce inflammation really quickly. If we have, say, a dog that's blown a disc and they're ataxic, they're having trouble walking, I would give a dog like that steroids, just because I want to get that inflammation down really as quickly as possible before we get permanent spinal cord damage or nerve damage, because that can happen. So we do that, you know, quick in the short term, and then we're doing other things to help treat the pet in the long term. But for long term, you know, prednisone use, like for skin and things like that, it's just suppressing symptoms, and you're going to end up with a worse disease process later on down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Are there other good appetite stimulants other than something like the damaging prednisone?
Well, if I see, I mean, again, I would want to do, you know, full diagnostics, find out what's going on. But your B vitamins, sometimes in, you know, I do see some debilitated, you know, cancer patients. The disease is a little bit more advanced. They're just not feeling good and they don't have good appetites. So I'll give like a B12 injections, and sometimes that can help. It perks them up, gives them some energy. They feel better. And B vitamins, you can't give them too many. They just pee them out. And if that helps, just kind of, you know, perk them up, stimulate their appetite, then I think that's a real simple and safe thing to do. There are pharmaceutical appetite stimulants out there, but I don't like using them. I just don't like throwing more and more pharmaceuticals at pets. I think we need to figure out, you know, why is the pet not eating, and what modifications can we do to the diet to, you know, to help them eat. I know with cancer patients, you know, they have good days and bad days. And if they have a day where they feel crummy and they eat a particular food, they will sometimes associate it with the food and they don't want to eat that food anymore. So I always recommend doing a lot of rotation, feed different things every day. If you find something that your pet really likes, if you keep feeding that one thing and then all of a sudden they have a day where they feel crummy, then they're not going to want to eat it anymore. So you want to have three or four things that the pet will eat. So, you know, you want to continue to rotate through, you know, make sure you're warming the food to make it more appetizing. Rotate, you know, sometimes I'll say just make them an egg or something, just for something different to keep them eating and keep them interested in food, rather than continuing to try the same things. You know, we really have to look at why they're not eating. There's also things that can help, you know, if they're nauseous. You know, there's homeopathics can help with nauseousness. There's herbs that can help kind of settle the stomach down. So there's lots of things we can do, but I think we don't want to reach for a chemical appetite stimulant right off the bat.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, everybody. If you would like to work with Dr. Judy Jasek, the holistic vet, the cancer specialist, the raw feeding vet who understands the gut biome, you want to go to animalhealingarts.com. Or you can Google Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. As always, we are here at Raw Dog Food and Company to help you get your pet started on the road to health and longevity, because your pet's business, your pet's health is our business. And here at Raw Dog Food and Company, friends, don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks, Dr. Jasek.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business. Just snap.